Welcome to the Startup Success Podcast with Bob Walsh and Patrick Foley. I'm Patrick Foley.
And I'm Bob Walsh.
In this, our 111th show, we interview Sophia Bekele of .NET Africa. This interview is a little bit out of the ordinary for us, but you never know where inspiration might come from. Occasionally, we'll do atypical shows like this, and our hope is that it will stimulate your thinking in new areas.
Today we have with us Sophia Bekele, who is the executive director of an organization that's trying to add something brand new to the world, .Africa. Sophia, how are you today?
I'm excellent, thank you. And yourself?
You can probably hear it in my voice. Let's start at the top, if you pardon the expression. You know, why should there be a .Africa? What does startups get out of that? And why does this matter?
Okay, good question. Particularly being here, it's not a question that we usually get in Africa, but I tell you, .Africa is a top-level domain name, right? So it's equivalent to .com, .org, .net, and so forth. So it is a number one, a categorization of what organizations are doing. Like, for example, the com stands for commercial and net starts, you know, stands for network, and the org represents the nonprofits and so forth. So sort of an identifier, top level domain name. So when you look at .Africa, it represents entirely a whole continent. And so people and businesses and entities want to be identified, at least who want to be identified with the .Africa brand will be interested in having it as a top level domain name. But we see it more than just an identifier. We see it as a way of people, particularly Africans, relating to the name as an identity, sort of like a driver's license from California or a passport from the U.S. So when you're thinking of particularly the youth who are developing products and services for the African market, they would like to identify it as Africa. So this will be a great way of uniting the voices and the identity of the African people and what they want to do. So we think it's a great brand.
So I can see why this is important for the people of Africa. What about for the people living in other continents? Is there something of importance for me as an American wanting .Africa to go through? Is it strictly something I should be cheering for people who wants it? Or is there some sort of, commerce that will be enabled by having .Africa?
Okay, good question. You hit the keyword commerce and also the social part of it. I'll just talk about that. Commerce is great. Most of the time when you do trade and commerce over, it could be electronic or any kind of commerce, old ways, barter, an exchange of goods and services, people really don't know what is in Africa or in any other continent per se. But since we're talking about .Africa, we'll focus on that. So how many Americans or people overseas know, you know, Africa produces shoes, leather? Most of the time, we have the commodities products like coffee or diamond and so forth that, you know, some of African countries have been identified with. But there are a lot of services as well, products and technologies that are really out there that are not being really seen or embraced by the West as a serious product for trade or commerce. And these .Africa identity will, when people start putting up their services and products online, then people get to know very easily what's in Africa. When you Google .Africa or under .Africa, what kind of things would come up really determine if and based on the websites and all these things that are set up, that would .Africa will allow for the presence of all these products and services by the nation to other nations. And so there will be a great opportunity for commerce and trade. In a sense, that should answer the question for commerce for you. But from the social perspective, I don't like to get political on this, is also the fact that when people get wealthier and employment and lack of employment, I should say, or countries that do not have the GDP where it should be, typical poverty in Africa, that sort of thing, that's expressed, that breeds the wars that we see in different countries. And you know, it's because of the lack of employment and the lack of economies and so forth. And what Dot Africa will bring is really not only identity because of trade and commerce, because of opportunities for Africa to be seen in a positive light and so forth. You know, there will be an opportunity to tell the world there, this is not the only thing that's there. We are more than a war nation. We are more than a poverty nation. So it's a great way of communicating what all Africa is about.
You know, I don't know how difficult it is to get a top-level domain name through all the organizations that regulate such things. How difficult is it, and where are you in the process? Are you close? Are you just starting? Are you confident you're going to finish? Can you just give us a level set of where you are?
Yeah, we're getting close. Yeah, yeah. Well, that is a very arduous experience. It was, at least, because of the lot of policy things. And because ICANN is the organization that issues the license, mm-hmm. which is based in Marina del Rey. And they have just opened offices here in Palo Alto, in fact. And so they're responsible for governing the internet from the IP addressing perspective as well as domain names. And so in the last 10 years or so, since ICANN started, there were only the 4 or 5. And then throughout the years, I think individual domain names have risen to about 24 top-level domain names that were issued. But the most successful ones, as we know, it is probably 3-4 of them. And it has gone through the evaluation process where ICANN thought, because of the demand from the community, that we need to open up this process for more than what we have right now. And so they decided to do a sort of a bidding system where people can apply, more than one applicant can apply for a particular string. And so they figure they have to go to a proper procedure on how to manage that. And that has taken a while, really a while, maybe 4 or 5 years. And so here we are now, because there's a lot of issues that had to be sorted out, because the stakeholder in ICANN is just more than commercial. It involves governments, it involves civil society and so forth. So trying to please everyone is not an easy thing. So I think ICANN has gone through a tremendous consensus building process to get where we are at right now. And hopefully there was a meeting in San Francisco just in March to address a lot of the issues that the government has risen. And now we are here, we're having a Singapore meeting in 3 months. And there it will be announced, hopefully, for application process to go through. And so we're looking at maybe September or so.
Wow.
For, yeah.
Is there any way people can help? So if someone's listening to this and says, I want to be a part of that, what is there anything people can do to help the cause?
To help the cause, yes, to ICANN on new GTLDs. That will be the bigger picture I see, because since it's a blanket process for everyone, we have done our job of Yes to Dot Africa campaign, but I think Yes to new GTLDs would really help. The whole idea of having a new generic top-level domain names would really be a benefit to a competition, even in the West and globally. We're not only looking at Latin scripts, for example. We're also looking at IDNs,
right,
which is international domain names that uses other languages. So the competition is going to help. People who are IDN needy globally would be able to have their own scripts as a result of this. And competition would breed good services, as we know it, in such market economies. So we would leave it to the market to govern the future of GTLDs. But, you know, at least there is an opportunity for people to get what they want and try it out and see if they're successful or not.
So far, it sounds about as controversial as Mother's Day. Let's. I know you're in a position where you have to be careful about what you say because you're working with a lot of these people. But who's against this? I mean, I don't know anything in politics, and this definitely gets into the brand of international politics.
Well, good question. There's nothing not to discuss, in fact, but such strings as, for example, think about .Muslim or .Nazi. You see, people want a lot of things throughout this process. If you're part of the deliberation, it's very, very interesting. The .XXX just got approved in San Francisco, as you know. And so that's been through the pipeline for like 2-3 years. And a lot of it's a very costly process for the owners of that TLD. So because of the same thing, so many voices coming, particularly from government side on the XXX and so forth. And for the .Nazi, you can imagine who will oppose it. So it's not necessarily the general GTLD process. Particularly, it's the particular strings that cause controversial, what's called controversial strings. So this is the problem we're having.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's come back to the question about what. Well, let's. Okay, that's the politics side. Let's talk about the money side for a moment, because when I buy a .com from somebody, they get my money. I don't know quite where that money goes, but they get it. It seems to be doing pretty well. What's the money side of all this?
The money side. Well, some of them are pure commercial entities. I mean, .com is a commercial entity. It had 80% of the global market so far. So I'm sure the competition probably did not rub well with them when the whole thing got expanded. So, you know, they're going to lose market share, but maybe not. You know, this is what we're saying. It's a test bed almost for people that are willing to take a $200,000 risk of applying for a name and being able to see if their TLD works or not. So a lot of there's a lot of names that are for commercial, so .bank, for example, but there's a lot of community representative TLDs, for example, such as .Zulu, for example. It's a Zulu tribe out in South Africa, and they want to be identified separately on their own community. Mm-hmm. So their community TLDs, their .youth, if somebody's wanting that. Because a lot of the people did not disclose what kind of strings they're up for running. But I think there is a page probably that discusses some of the things. .Africa is considered a geographic name, for example. So there is .Latin America as .LAT coming up as well. There are other geographic names at the city level, .Paris, .San Francisco. They're all bidding for this. And so there are different categories of applications that most of the community and the city models, they probably, you know, it's not for profit. So the model sort of dictates, you know, you give back to the social or the community. And the pure commercial ones, like .food or .bank and so forth, are worth for grabs. So you have enough banks registering under your domain. Definitely there is an opportunity to make money, not only on the registration, but the, you know, the Google ads and many, many other applications that you can strike a deal with the clients.
Suddenly I'm getting the feeling we're talking literally about billions of dollars.
Yes, it's a billion-dollar industry. Very, 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 very. I think 5% of the globe knew about it in the past, I would always say, because until I got into it as a policy advisor for the ICANN.
Usually, you know, the people grabbing the land don't tell the indigenous people, oh, by the way, that's got oil underneath it or what have you. Okay.
Maybe that's the reason to have a new GTLD, to spread the wealth and create competition.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, if let's say that you're successful. Let's say that .Africa becomes something that everybody is typing as they are now .eu. Where will that money go from the registration fees? Will it be split up among the 61 or so different territories in Africa?
No. It's not allocated that way at all. Actually, there are 54 countries with the new Sudan coming in. And we're thinking of the diaspora Africans also as a stakeholder. So what typically happens is you know, we have a trust, for example, that DCA is a trust, and you redistribute back based on projects that you think that are worthy of sustainability. You evaluate typical, you know, Bill Gates looks at many projects for funding, right? The trust or any other one. So you establish a trust in any organization. You come up with a curriculum of who should be getting the monies back. So we have already have that in our governance model and in our financial model, where we plan to give back the money to other projects that we think are worthy to give in Africa. Because not every project can be funded. Not every project can be sustainable. So just like any other, like a bank will evaluate a project to see if it's worthy of putting money in and good for society, that sort of thing, and redistribute the money based on that.
Most of our listeners are technologists creating technology solutions for various markets.
Right.
With your knowledge of Africa and working on the .Africa domain name project, have you noticed particularly underserved areas from a technology perspective that people from anywhere in the world could help provide services, you know, whether nonprofit or profit-based services to the people of Africa, that you've said, boy, I wish someone would create technology to do what? Have you noticed anything like that? Or
Yeah. Thank you for asking. That's a very good question, because basically, you know, that now Africa is working on broadband, which is infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We need infrastructure to allow all these new technologies to come on board and flourish, right? Mm-hmm. So without broadband, really, it's going to be very difficult for internet technologies to make a difference. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
The governments have been working very closely with the people and policy providers and partners, international partners as well, investment. People who are investing in Africa to improve broadband. Now that once that's set up, which we think is going to happen in the next 3-4 years, because it's gotten awareness to the highest level of policymakers, then we think of what to put on that highway. It's like building a highway,
right,
and having the cars on there. So the next thing is content. Now we're looking at content. You know, you can't just have a broadband with no content. So people are looking really for content providers in local languages as well as even basic mm-hmm. English. Content in terms of industry specific, it could be banking, it could be for the farmers, it could be for, when I say farmers, agriculture, any information system that we used to think about building on networks, regular networks. Now you're thinking of building it on internet and also mobile phones. Mobile phones have really rapidly grown in Africa because instead of building an infrastructure, telephone
right.
infrastructure, people have moved to mobiles, and everybody who doesn't even have $100 income a month has a mobile. So this is great. So what does that mean? We are looking at applications to be built on mobile. And we'd love to have partners think of what could be done on mobiles to facilitate trade transactions, even just simply, you know, reducing the time of going to the bank and people could remotely transfer monies from the village without necessarily having even an account in a bank. That's what happened with this M-Pesa. If you Google that, you will see it's a technology that allows people to just do money transfer and trade and transact without having a mobile bank account. So these kind of technologies we look for, it's really done for emerging economies. And even that is being replicated in the West because, you know, what's good for the gander is good for, how they say?
The goose. Yeah.
So that's really what's happening. It's just to make people's life easier.
And
we don't have a lot of infrastructure in Africa in terms of transport. You see, that's also parallel building with broadband. But that is what makes it hard for people to move around and do
right.
trade and commerce. So anything on the internet that's built wireless and whatever to assist would help out. Yeah.
And what about education, specifically technology education? Is there a need for additional? I'm thinking about how do we create the next wave of software technologists in Africa creating solutions for its own needs as well. Is that well enough served, or is there a lack there also? And how do we fill it?
I think training comes with deployment, in my opinion, because if you don't have something that you've deployed, training
okay.
people, on new technologies without actually them having to use it the next day. Practical experience is pretty useless. I've commuted to Africa back and forth for the last decade, and I've found that a lot of people who are just doing training and what's the next step? Okay, you train me, I will forget it. I'm sorry, in probably 2 months if I don't use something, and that happens here.
But not training to use, training to create. And so obviously, yes, you need the equipment and infrastructure to, you know, create support. The next generation of apps. But is there a seed that's at least been planted to have, you know, the apps for Africa being built in Africa?
I think there is. Certain countries have adapted many, like you were talking about something like... what this incubator type?
Yeah.
So yes, it's happening all over sporadically in Africa. The sustainability is always the problem financially, but that's the concept is there. People are very much aware of it. I know Kenya, where we have our base, is very, very big in this. One of the things actually we're really trying to push in Africa in general is trying to get investors to come in and put in seed money for such emerging technologies where the Africans really, the developers there could work on local content, putting everything on local content and developing actually the content there. It's like almost insourcing. That kind of concept. We're very much looking at that right now, even in collaboration with the governments and so forth. So if you have any ideas, please let us know.
All right. And that goes for listeners as well.
Yeah.
So one last question for me. One of the hottest software segments in the U.S., it always kind of amazes me, is games. If you want to create a popular application for mobile, for example, you're more likely to succeed creating a game than creating a productivity app. With the budding technology market in Africa, is there a market for games?
I think there is perhaps more in the developed economies versus in others. Yeah, like South Africa or something like that. You would see that happening. Otherwise, I really don't see. No, people don't have time to play games on particularly if the game is based on usage of internet. I'm not a big game player, so if that's the case, then it's going to be hard for people to spend money to play games on that.
That was just my, I kind of guessed that, but I just figured I wanted, was just curious, so I'd make sure. Thanks.
Yeah.
Got one more question for you. When people start doing the same thing together, they tend to start creating an identity together. You know, whether we're talking about the 600 million people on Facebook or elsewhere, I'm wondering, how much would a .Africa really mean for African startups, you know, wherever they may be in Africa? How much will it mean for the, I think you call the, you know, the generation, the .Africa generation? Is this the glue that makes this possible?
I think we're hoping that's the glue. Because first of all, it's youth. Youth is always on technologies and they're always exploring. So, and then there is the curious batch. You know, we don't put an age on this generation in .Africa per se, but it's a way of trying to unite people in Africa to be the ones exploring the social medias right now, the Facebooks and the Twitters. People are using that. Even, you know, recently I've learned that Rwanda, one of the countries who are hugely into technology, the MPs, which is the members of parliament, I was told that they are mandated to be on Twitter, which is unlike other, probably another next door neighbor country, probably illegal to be on Facebook or Skype. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a lot of room for creating that and gluing, like you say, that was a good word for collaboration and sharing information. And that's really what social media brings. And the Generation.Africa groups are the ones that are curious enough to be on that, to get connections with the outside world and to learn more and to get opportunities to better their lives. And so that creates naturally a variety of people to be on the internet and forcing themselves to connect. And that we think is, you know, will be a bridge not only within the West and Africa, but it will be a bridge within the different African continents and countries.
Well, Sophia, one of the real pleasures of technology for me is that the world becomes smaller and smaller. We meet people from every part of the world more readily. And your work with .Africa is going to make the world smaller still in the sense of bringing us closer to another continent that some of us in North America often neglect. So thank you very much for that work. And if there's anything else we can do or our listeners can do, please let us know. But thank you so much for spending time with us and explaining to us what you're doing with .Africa.
Thanks, Pat. And I want to thank also Bob for being open-minded to explore what we were doing and snatching us from the Web 2.0 conference. I appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Yeah, the more voices we have out, the very good. So we'd like people to be aware of the Yes to .Africa campaign and what we're doing. Plug in into our social media sites and get to know Africa, the news on Africa that we always have. We have three Pan-African social media following, we say. That's in French and Arabic, which are the major languages in Africa. So we have created that. So it's a way of, and we populate information, similar information in there for everyone to see. So if you're looking for any African news, please use .Africa as a gateway to see what's going on. And we
Wonderful.
Make sure we keep it current.
Thank you.
If you liked this show, check out some of our previous episodes at startupsuccesspodcast.com. Bob and I are here to help startups succeed. Bob offers a service called MicroConsult. You meet with Bob for an hour using Skype and a variety of online tools and come away with 8 or 10 actionable steps to take to improve your bottom line. Visit Bob's site, 47hats.com, to learn more. Microsoft has a program for software startups called BizSpark. If your startup is less than 3 years old and making less than $1 million in revenue, BizSpark gives you access to our premier development tools, service products for production, even Windows Azure with no upfront costs. Visit bizspark.com or email me at patrick.foley@microsoft.com to get started. That's our show. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week and be sure to visit our website for more episodes of the Startup Success Podcast with Bob Walsh and Patrick Foley.